Hello, my name is Brookline. I'm a barrister at Landmark Chambers, and I'm going to talk for the next 15, 20 minutes or so about interim possession orders. As most property lawyers will know, on the 26th of March of this year, the Master of the Rolls and the Lord Chancellor introduced Practice Direction 51Z in order to respond to the coronavirus pandemic. Now, that practice direction provided that all proceedings for possession under Part 55, including evictions, were to be stayed for a period of 90 days. Now, that was obviously an important change, stopping evictions in the short term, at least until the 25th of June. Now, on the face of it, that stay caught claims against trespassers, because a claim for possession against a trespasser has to be issued under Part 55. As a result, and it seeming to be a much broader stay to possession matters than was perhaps intended, the Property Bar Association and the Property Litigation Association wrote to the Master of the Rolls explaining why a complete veto on all possession proceedings, including against trespassers, would be a problem. So as of today, and in response to that letter, it seems, the situation has essentially been amended. So now there are a couple of exceptions to the automatic stay introduced under Practice Direction 51Z. Essentially, there's three circumstances in which the stay does not now apply. The first is a claim against trespassers, to which Rule 55.6 applies. Second, an application for an interim possession order. And then thirdly, an application for case management directions, which are agreed by all the parties. Now, the first thing to say is there's some lack of clarity here, because Rule 55.6 is concerned with the procedural aspects of applying for a possession order against persons unknown. Now, it seems that the first exception to the stay appears to have been intended to allow for trespasser possession claims. But actually what it appears to have done is allow for only trespasser possession claims against persons whose names aren't identified. So you can only issue, it seems, a possession claim, or you can only pursue a possession claim if the trespassers are not identified. Now, whether or not that's actually what the Master of the Rolls intended, it's not entirely clear. It's probably more likely what he intended to do was to allow trespasser possession claims as defined under the CPR, and not just those against persons unknown. So we may yet see some amendment to that to clarify the situation. But what I really wanted to talk to people about today is interim possession orders, because it's abundantly clear that the stay does not now apply to an interim possession order. And it strikes me that being a property practitioner, that a lot of property lawyers and a lot of landlords are not terribly familiar with the procedure for interim possession orders, because usually, or certainly there is a perception that applying for an ordinary trespasser possession order via the usual route is just as good or only slightly slower, and therefore often interim possession orders are not sought. So I'm hoping, if I can, to provide a little bit of clarity on what interim possession orders are and how you apply for them. So in short, an IPO is a method of eviction which allows for a quick remedy, and it can only be granted against trespassers. Crucially, the failure to comply with an interim possession order is a criminal offence. So once the interim possession order has been served on a squatter, that person must leave the property within 24 hours in order to avoid committing an offence for which that person can then be arrested and charged by the police. Now, it's important to note that you can't just get an IPO in any case. There's quite strict circumstances in which an IPO may be available. The first thing to say is an interim possession order can only be used for the recovery of possession in respect of premises. So that's not open land. So it has to be some form of premises, not open land. Secondly, an IPO, the procedure for an IPO is only available to landlords who start proceedings within 28 days of either first knowing that the squatters are in occupation, or 28 days from when he or she ought to have reasonably known about the occupation. So in a case where the landlord has sat on the trespassers for 28 days or more, has had knowledge for 28 days or more, essentially an IPO won't be available to you. Certainly in my experience, in cases where trespassers have entered premises and they are squatters, it seems to me that often landlords do know and do deal with that quite swiftly. But it's important to remember that if you need to work out when you first knew, essentially, to know whether or not this remedy might be available to you. Thirdly, interim possession orders can only be used to evict squatters who entered the premises without the consent of the owner. Now, that's important because essentially an ex-licensee or a former licensee who had a license to occupy premises previously, but once that license expired became a trespasser, is not someone against whom you could seek an interim possession order. So essentially it's someone who has to have entered the premises as a trespasser. They can't have become a trespasser despite having a license or right of possession previously. Fourth condition is that the owner or the landlord must have owned or been the lessee or tenant of the property throughout the period of the squatter's occupation. So a landlord who has just bought the property after the squatters entered the occupation can't apply for an interim possession order. So it must be the same person who's been the lessee or the person entitled to possession throughout the period of the occupation by the squatters. And then finally, and this one's probably obvious, the owner or landlord must have an immediate right to possession of the property. So it's no good if they're the superior landlord with no immediate right to possession. It's got to be the person that's got that immediate right to have possession of the property. So they're the restrictions. If you meet all of those restrictions, then you'll want to know what the procedure is to apply for an IPO. So the first thing to say is, as usual, you need to issue a claim form. So that's form N5, and you need to file an application notice for the interim possession order. So it's almost treated like a claim, but also an application. And you also need to provide written evidence in the form of the N130 form. Now, it's important to note at this point that the witness statement must be from the claimant, so the person who is the claimant, or by an authorised officer of the claimant if it's a company. So often I'll find in possession matters where the landlord doesn't have much day-to-day involvement with the property, that actually it's the solicitor or a managing agent that provides a witness statement. In an application for an interim possession order, that's not good enough. What you need is the claimant themselves or an authorised officer to have signed a witness statement. Once you've got all of the relevant documents and you filed them at court, the court will issue a claim form, will issue the claim form and the application there and then, and it will set a date for the hearing of the application there and then. And the reason they do that is because there's such a swift turnaround, essentially. The hearing will be as soon as reasonably practicable, but not less than 3 days from the date of issue. Now, in my experience, I've had a couple of cases where the court has been so overzealous that it's issued a hearing 2 days after issue of the application. Now, that can't happen under the rules, not without dispensation. So in that case, we had to invite them to relist it. So it's worth, when you get the issued claim form, that should tell you the date of the hearing, that you double check that it's at least 3 days after the date of issue. Now, it's really important that you have those 3 days as well, because you need to serve the interim possession order application on the respondent. So moving to service then, the claimant needs to serve the occupiers with the claim form, the notice of application, and any written evidence in support. You also need to include, there's a sort of a blank form for the occupier's witness statement. You need to include that as well. It's basically a form for them to fill out if they intend to defend proceedings. Now, this is really important. Once the claim has been issued, you have to serve, once the application has been issued, you need to serve it within 24 hours of the application being issued. So that's a really swift timeframe. Essentially, what you need to do is you need to get everything sorted before issuing the claim, get your process server or whoever's carrying out service ready to do it. So there's 24 hours. It's done within the 24 hours. As you'd expect, you need to be able to file then a certificate of service confirming that you've complied with your service obligations. And it's best if you can do that before the hearing. But of course, if it can't be done before the hearing, you might need to bring it along to the first hearing or send it to the court on the day of the first hearing. Obviously, if you're actually attending court, which isn't happening very much at the moment, any advocate should be taking along some spare copies of the certificate of service. It's worth pointing out at this point, service can be achieved by either attaching the relevant documents to the main door or any other sort of entrance of the property so that they're clearly visible, and where possible, inserting copies through a letterbox if one's available or under the door. The alternative is to serve the documents by placing stakes in the land where they're clearly visible and putting them in transparent sealed envelopes. And they should, of course, unless you know the names of the people, which is unlikely, they should be addressed to the occupiers. Now, it's really important that claimants get the service procedure right and they do it within the required time. Because if you don't, not only could it provide a defence to the proceedings, but even if no one attends that first hearing, the court is going to be really hot on procedure and is going to be really conscious to ensure that it's been followed properly, because the consequences of non-compliance with an interim possession order are serious. We have already said it's a criminal offence not to comply. So the court is going to be really sort of tight on whether or not you've complied with the procedure properly. If you haven't served properly or there's a problem with your application, you can almost certainly expect the court will adjourn. At any time before the hearing, the squatter can file a witness statement and respond to the application, or alternatively, they may attend the hearing irrespective of whether or not they filed a witness statement. And that's similar to the ordinary situation in possession claims, that often you'll find that even if a defence hasn't been filed, the defendant will be entitled to participate in proceedings despite having not put in a fully pleaded defence. So moving to the hearing then, and obviously we're in kind of uncharted territory because these hearings are usually done in person, almost always have been done in person, and we're not in that situation at the moment. How that's going to operate in practice, it's yet to be seen. Probably the hearing will be done remotely, either by telephone or by video conference. The difficulty here is, how does the person who is named as persons unknown actually find out what the details of that particular hearing are? One assumes they'll have to make contact with the court to know how they get access to the hearing details, but it does present some hurdles, an additional hurdle for occupiers who are unnamed essentially in proceedings. The court, when deciding whether to grant an interim possession order, it will have regard to a number of things, but firstly it will have regard to whether or not the landlord has given or is prepared to give certain undertakings to the court in support of their application. So this is quite similar to the situations as practitioners will be familiar with for interim injunctions. So for an interim injunction, you're expected to be giving undertakings to the court or to be prepared to do so. And this is very similar. Essentially, you need really to be prepared to give some form of undertaking in respect of reinstating or paying damages in circumstances where it becomes clear later on that the landlord or the claimant wasn't actually entitled to an interim possession order, and or agreeing to give damages to re-let the property or damage the occupier's, but not to damage or re-let the property or damage the occupier's possessions for the final determination of possession proceeding. So those ones are pretty obvious. The first is that you're willing to give an undertaking to pay damages if the IPO should never have been granted. And then alternatively, you're willing to give an undertaking not to damage anything in the property that belongs to the occupiers. Most landlords seeking a possession order or an interim possession order would be prepared to give those. Often, if it's a straightforward trespasser matter without any real complications, giving those undertakings shouldn't be too much of a hardship. Of course, clients don't like to give undertakings for the obvious reason of it's kind of it feels difficult at times, but in most cases, if you're applying for an IPO, and you should be, those undertakings shouldn't be difficult or too difficult to give. The court will make an interim possession order, so it's mandatory unless there's some kind of hiccup, essentially, in circumstances where the claimant has followed the proper service procedure, all of the relevant conditions for an interim possession order are met, so we talked about those at the beginning, and that the landlord has given adequate undertakings in support. So as long as you've done those three things, service, you meet relevant conditions, and you've given adequate undertakings, and the court's not really got a discretion to grant the IPO, and it will grant the IPO. If the court is for any reason not satisfied of any of those conditions, then it won't make the order. At the hearing as well, the court will set another date for the main possession claim to be heard. So the ordinary possession hearing will be heard thereafter, and a date will be set at the first court hearing for the IPO. It's important to note it will be at least 7 days after that first hearing, therefore giving the occupiers a bit of time, not only time for service of the IPO, but also to give the occupiers a bit of time before the substantive possession hearing. Now, it's important to note that there's the procedure of how does the eviction take place, essentially. Well, the way it works is an interim possession order has to be served within 48 hours of being sealed. So again, we're talking about quite a quick turnaround here. So as soon as you get the order, a sealed copy of the order, and of course you're going to have to be at court for this. As soon as you've got a sealed copy of the order, you're going to have your process servers ready to go and serve it within 48 hours. The order then sets out, and it requires the squatters to leave the premises within 24 hours of service upon them. So again, it's important to remember not only that you have 48 hours to serve, that you make a close note of precisely when service took place to know when the 24 hours start from. If the squatter fails to leave within the 24 hours, then that person has committed a criminal offence. So obviously the consequences of not doing it are very serious. If you fail to serve the IPO within the 48 hours, then no offence will have been committed, even if it's then served thereafter. A person who is in non-compliance with an interim possession order is essentially not only has committed offence, but there's the risk of a £5,000 fine and or a prison sentence of up to 6 months. So, you know, it's a really serious matter if an IPO isn't complied with, and that's what gives these orders their teeth, essentially. Then they'll, of course, so once the IPO has been hopefully served, hopefully then the occupiers will leave within 24 hours, and then there'll be the second hearing, so what the substantive first possession hearing, essentially. And it's important to note the IPO itself will expire on the date of the hearing of the claim. So it's only kind of a short-lived temporary order until the substantive possession claim can be heard. And at that hearing, as you would expect, is a normal possession hearing, essentially. They can decide to make a final possession order. They can dismiss the claim. They can direct that the claim be dealt with under the usual possession claim procedure. Or they can even enforce any of the landlord's or the claimant's undertakings that were given at the IPO hearing. So it's a whole range of things the court can do at that first hearing. Assuming then that a final possession order is made, the interim possession order ceases to exist. And if the claimant wishes to evict the squatter immediately in the usual way, they would apply for a warrant or indeed for transfer up to the High Court for a writ. So essentially it's the same process thereafter, but you would hope that the occupiers have gone earlier on in order to avoid committing a criminal offence. So the eviction then has to be carried out in the normal way with bailiffs executing a warrant once the final possession order has been made. It's important to note as well, the squatter will not commit a further offence by remaining in the property once the IPO is no longer operating. Once it's a final order, there's no criminal offence being committed. So I'm hoping that provides kind of a whistle-stop tour, essentially, of what interim possession orders are and how you apply for them. I suspect in the next few weeks, given the present circumstances and the lack of clarity over the stay introduced by Practice Direction 51Z, that more so than before, solicitors and landlords will need to be thinking about whether or not an interim possession order might provide the remedy that you're seeking at the moment, whilst the situation about trespassers more generally, claims for possession against trespassers more generally, hasn't yet been clarified.